The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Now, you might have heard there at the top of the headlines, Gordon Brown has called for Scotland to unite and find common ground after the bruising, as he described it, independence referendum. In a speech in Fife, he went on, they should be assured that the powers and timetable for devolution promised from the main parties in Westminster during the campaign would be delivered. Now, I have to tell you, if I were a Scots person who had voted either yay or nay, I would be a little browned off today. I mean, all of Westminster bigwigs charged up there in a panic last week and promised the devil and all. Why does this not surprise me? Why does this not surprise me? Except I thought it might have been genuine. Dates, times, the whole lot on devolution. The results hadn't been properly announced when you could see the politicking going on below and the pulling back and the dates changing and on and on. And Miliband talking about a conference that, of course, as you know, is a wonderful ploy for if you don't want to face up to something because it could go on for years. And Cameron doing his thing and then Cameron jockeying for position in England. Honestly, I thought it was absolutely sickening. And if ever you heard of put not your trust in princes, put not your trust in princes who are prince type politicians. But anyway, that would be my view if I were in Holland. Now, the coverage in the British papers today is wall to wall, like a page 13 of the Telegraph, and they're still on it. And there's analysis going this way, that way, and the other way. And Mark Hennessy is writing in the Irish Times, and the headline there is Rhetoric of Change Masks Ongoing Divide in Scotland. So let me go to an Irishman, certainly if you've been here for 25 years, you know, Ian Robertson, who's been on the programme so many times before. He is a professor of psychology in Trinity College, and he is the man who tells you the power is very bad for you because it'll generate things in your brain that are not a good idea. But anyway, that's not why he's on here today. You were born, you've lived in Ireland for a quarter of a century, Ian, so you didn't have a vote, but you were writing in the Telegraph and you were saying, this is beforehand, that as a psychologist, just you would vote yes, but as somebody who had lived in Ireland for 25 years, you would vote no.
That's right, Marion. Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've lived actually 15 years in Ireland. I've been out of Scotland for 25 years.
Oh, God, I thought and you were here for the 25.
That's fine. But no, I do travel in the absence of a Scottish passport, I travel on an Irish one. I think that there was I myself was completely torn coming up to this referendum. I oscillated between yes and no. In the end, I realised that the arguments for independence were really strongly psychological. They weren't really economic arguments at all, and the economic ones. I do think that living in a small country is expensive, and small doesn't come cheap, as we all know.
Yeah,
living in Ireland. Nevertheless, I felt there were, particularly given that it was young working class men were so involved in the Yes campaign.
Yeah, why did that matter so much?
Well, young working class men across the Western world have not fared particularly well over the last 50 years. The jobs they do have tended to disappear, the heavy industry and the like. They're no longer paterfamilias nearly as much because of the breakup of families and the likelihood that many single parent families where the women would be tend to be in charge. So, and then the educational underachievement compared to girls, and they have higher suicide rates, as we all know all too painfully in Ireland. So here we had a social movement. And it really was a social movement in Scotland that captured the imagination of these young men who otherwise, you know, are vulnerable to drugs and drink and all sorts of other things, and losing their jobs, losing their sense of place and their sense of identity, and suddenly there was a cause for them. So, you know, psychologically, I found this very powerful, and it was reflected in the turnout in the vote, an unprecedented 86% turnout.
Well, actually, what's kind of really interesting about the turnout, and actually that is the wonderful thing, that if people get exercised, they will turn out, which is so important. But Glasgow's turnout in the Scottish Parliament elections, usually around 40%, and on this occasion, 75%.
Yeah, it was quite extraordinary. And of course, Glasgow voted, and Dundee, they voted heavily yes. So,
yes.
And they are both very working class cities.
Yes.
I think the polls got it wrong to some extent, because the no voters were all kind of oldies like myself, you know, more well off, more old, more aware of the economic threats that would have followed from a vote for independence.
You made the point in that article, and you said, well, I'm not just a psychologist, I'm a resident of a country, Ireland, which suffered a catastrophic economic shock equivalent to Iceland's in 2008. And I saw people, huge suffering and personal stress, and your own take-home pay slashed by at least 25 to 35%. Now, you figure, as you said yourself, small is expensive, and that there would have been expenditure like tax rises and expenditure in public services would be cut, and that the Scots would not have had anticipated that.
Yes, I you see, if you go to the Royal Scottish Museum in Edinburgh, there's a section of it where famous Scots people are asked to nominate an item that captures their lives and Scotland for them, and, you know, things, something very, very dear and important to them. And Alex Salmond's item there was a poster from the film Braveheart.
And he
said that he came back into politics on the back of an enormous wave of emotional nationalism that captured the hearts, particularly of these young men I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And brought this enormous wave. So it was an exceptionally emotional movement, which is why it had such power and such motivational capacity. But people were saying, to hell with it, I want to go for this for emotional reasons, and to hell with the economics. That was their view of it. And I had some great sympathy with that, because I live in a country where, you know, I've made the choice, you know, to hell with the economics. I love living in Ireland. I feel part of Ireland. It's much easier to feel part of a small country than of a big country, particularly a country like Scotland, which votes completely differently from the major dominant country, England, where there is a different set of values that predominate politically, and in particular because of the English attitudes to Europe. There was this part of me that really strongly felt, yes, let's go for it. But I don't think that the people who were emotionally engaged in a very positive way for the Yes campaign, I don't think they quite anticipated what it could be like once you are on your own in the stormy waters of the international markets.
And, you know, the phrase is used often about us being a small, open economy. And you made the point in that the interest rates were kept at a crucial time to satisfy German needs rather than Irish needs when money was being thrown out like Smarties.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, commentators at the time realised this, but we could do nothing about it. But, the real thing that I think that Scotland didn't anticipate, or the Scottish people, was what it would mean if they did use sterling, as they claimed they wanted to do. They didn't realise that Westminster would have to have the veto over their budgets. In the same way as in Ireland, you know, our budget was famously seen by the German Bundestag before it was seen by the Irish Parliament. So once you tie yourself to a bigger currency, you lose an enormous amount of sovereignty. And I do not think that was in the mind, that reality had was present in the minds of the many of the yes voters.
Well, can I just ask your opinion? I was watching, like, I really was sickened last night at how quickly people were rowing back. And I'm saying genuinely from the perspective of either a yes voter or a no voter. And there was all this talk about Westminster and Westminster controlling Scotland and all of that. And we saw them all go up. We saw Gordon Brown make a speech, saw Cameron, saw Miliband, saw... And the envelopes had hardly been fully opened when they were rowing back on that.
Oh, I only saw that this morning. I'm abroad just now.
Oh, I only
saw that this morning, that Salmond, one of his reasons for resigning was that his phone call with David Cameron, where all these concrete promises about a specific date for the legislation, as you say, were being rowed back on. And I really felt a sick in the pit of my stomach, because that what that's going to do is going to completely sour the idealism and that positive movement towards democracy that, you know, was a very positive movement in Scotland.
Absolutely.
It's going to make people cynical and not believe politicians anymore. And here we have a political movement where was engaging people where there wasn't cynicism about politics. It is going to bring that crashing to the ground. And it will, honestly, if they carry on like this, this will not be good for Scotland, and it will not be good for the UK either.
No, and it won't be good for politics generally in the Western world. I mean, because it just adds to the concept that you can't believe two words you're told.
Oh, I completely agree with that. And I tell you, the Western, one of the reasons that the logical me as opposed to the emotional me felt they should, in the end, I kind of probably would have voted no myself, reluctantly. But one of the reasons is the West, the liberal democracies of the West, are under such siege from authoritarian cultures that have values completely different from ours. Russia, China, and the awfulness of the Middle East. We are a very fragile flower, and we are wonderful in the sense that we have constraints on the power of our leaders, the free press, the democratic process. But once you start to tamper and be cynical about that democratic process, that makes us, the liberal democracies of the West, much more vulnerable to these awful international forces.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed for taking our call. And we will reflect on these matters. Actually, I must refer later on to an article written today by Alan Shatter in the Irish Independent, which I'll come to, where he's having a go. And we could, well, we won't, but you could nearly run a competition to say who is he having a go at, so to speak. But more of that later on. And never mind. At this stage, we'll take a break. And coming up after that, I'll be talking to a gentleman by the name of Gabriel Fitzpatrick.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.